everybody. This is Preston Johnson at Sports Cheetah from Twitter. You might know me. You might know me from Fantasy Guru Elite. We are here launching episode 5 of A Petty Moose. We are streaming live. You probably saw the Periscope feed go up on Twitter. I'm here with Linda Train, Matthew Lindemann, Caesar's Own, and I know you've been sweating these baseball openers because you guys, if I recall, have been the first globally to actually put the lines up for some of these, which has been kind of fun to see.
Yeah, we actually we did the two play-in games yesterday, and then the two today. Or I want to say, actually, we just did today's game. We didn't get around to doing games today that open for the next couple of days. But yeah, a lot of fun. You know, kind of having an opportunity to do something like that's usually something you don't really get a chance to do. So doing that, and then obviously kind of rooting. You know, I want the Rockies because we opened it a lot lower and. You know, it closed pretty high, so I'd like to see the Rockies get this done. But either way, yeah, it's a lot of fun doing that stuff.
A little, more pressure on you, too, right?
Yeah, for sure.
No, that's fun. We have a couple callers already on the line, so we'll just jump right into it, get to some Twitter questions later on. Colin is up first. Colin, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, guys, long-time listener, first-time caller.
It is.
Oh, man.
How's it going, bud?
Good. I'm actually in Chicago at work. I thought I'd step out and give you guys a good call. Something I've struggled with in college football this week. I thought I would throw it out as a topic.
Sure.
You guys can go on about it, and I'll hang up and I'll listen to the podcast tomorrow.
You're not at the Cubs game right now?
Yeah.
You didn't just step out of Wrigley real quick to give us a ring?
Now, I'm in Chicago. I'm outside of the game. I'm in a bar full of Cubs fans, so I had to step out where the yelling is going on just because they got one runner on.
The double play.
Now that Lester's out of the game, this I don't know what the hell is going to happen with that. It depends on, like, you know, who's going to come in for the Cubs and the righty-lefty situation with how Colorado treats lefties.
Hey, fire away whenever you're ready. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, let's talk college football. So the first, what I wanted to say was I've struggled with this week. I've had a lot of questions. I don't exactly know how to answer it. So Trevor Lawrence is going to play for Clemson. What was his value worth to a power rating, according to you guys? Because I had a hard time just kind of licking my thumb, sticking it up in the air, and trying to figure out if this kid is worth 2 points, 8 points, 10 points. Kelly Bryant's gone. I got Chase Bryce in the back of him. And the second part of the question is, what do you make of Ryan Willis as a quarterback for Virginia Tech? Because the number with Notre Dame, obviously the number that I had for Notre Dame, was higher than what the current number is right now, but I don't think we know what Ryan Willis's potential is, and I think maybe I marked Virginia Tech down a little bit too much, lose to Old Dominion, lose Josh Jackson. So how much do you know, you take off the power rating for losing your starting quarterback, you take off the power rating for losing outright as a 28-point favorite to Old Dominion. So it's a two-part question. What would you take off of Clemson if something does happen to Trevor Lawrence, and how do you make a Virginia Tech power rating with Ryan Willis looking serviceable and looking competent against Duke with Josh Jackson out. So,
perfect.
Guys, I love the show. I downloaded last week. I'm going to download again this week, and I'm going to give you guys a retweet. I love it. I'm going to hang up, and you guys go ahead.
Right, thanks, Colin.
Yeah, I appreciate it. For those now that are listening live, I know I got some requests to rephrase these questions since you're unable to actually hear them. That was Colin Wilson at Colin_1. Probably on Twitter. That's my guess. I apologize if that's incorrect. He does a show. You can check it out. He does some work for, I think, at The Athletic, the Action Network. He's been doing a lot of stuff. So check his Twitter handle out. But he had two questions about quarterbacks. I will kind of rephrase them very briefly. And then, Matt, you can take a shot at it first if you'd like. He was curious how we basically have gone about adjusting for Trevor Lawrence and Clemson and his value to their team after Kelly Bryant obviously ends up transferring. Lawrence is named the starter. That line shot up a ton, went from, I think, as low as 18.5 to 25.5 at one point. I thought it was a little extreme. I don't think he's worth 7 points versus Kelly Bryant. I think the number was a little too low just to begin with because Syracuse has been on fire. But ultimately, what do you value him? And he already practiced from what I read earlier today, and Colin mentioned he's supposed to play this week, so he's okay, fortunately. And then he also had a second QB question about Willis, the new Virginia Tech quarterback, since Jackson went out. And I actually bet under in that game and basically bet the market number, thinking it would come down. But I actually was sweating that reverse. I thought Willis would struggle because he was awful at Old Dominion when he got thrown into the game. And he ended up being pretty solid. He might not be much of a drop-off. So where do you think he factors in for Virginia Tech in the Notre Dame game this week was Colin's two-part question, along with Clemson's Trevor Lawrence.
Well, I think with Lawrence, I actually thought he was going to be an upgrade over Bryant. I thought he was worth maybe like a half point to a point above him, and I thought there was a lot of upside with the Clemson offense with him there and being able to push the ball downfield and spread the ball around some more, really open up the running game. So I was expecting big things last week, and I think, you know, like we talked about, this Syracuse team is a lot better than we expected. Dino Babers is a hell of a coach, so I think we maybe underestimated that. But As far as going into this game, if something were to happen to Lawrence and he wasn't able to play, or say he got, you know, his bell rung again like he did last week, I think it would probably be, I would imagine, a 3 to 4 point drop to the next guy, the third stringer. And the third stringer looked great and lead them to that win.
I will say that Chase Bryce fourth down and seven throw was pretty high level for a three-star recruit in that pressure situation.
No, he stepped up for
sure. He misses
that
throw, they lose almost certainly in that game.
Yeah, I mean, he looked good, but I just think, you know, as far as third stringer going in, just zero experience and then all the tape, you know, a team having a week to prepare and look at tape on him would be a totally different scenario. So I do think there would be a pretty big drop-off there, obviously. Virginia Tech, I'm just going to be honest, I got no clue how to handle Virginia Tech. I mean, this team loses to Ole Dom 1 week, and then they play a Duke team who gets their quarterback, Daniel Jones, back, gets absolutely steamed against them from like 4 to 7.
Seven, yeah.
And then they just dominate. So this is, you know, year 20 in a row where I've just had no read on Virginia Tech. I have no idea.
Year 20.
I can't figure the team out. So, you know, this guy might be an upgrade from what I've heard. He actually looked a little bit better than Jackson in the Old Dominion game. I haven't actually watched him, but he might really not be much of a drop-off.
Yeah, I wouldn't drop Virginia Tech. Ultimately, one game against Old Dom isn't going to, you know, change a ton. But the real drop-off, I think, in, like, people projecting spreads for their game against Duke and then this week was the Jackson out, Willis in. And it doesn't look like that's going to be much of a drop-off. He's a better passer, not as good of a runner. That ultimately maybe is a wash overall. So it'll be interesting to see. I think we'll see a second week in a row here against a better defense in Notre Dame's, and we'll probably learn a lot more. Thanks again, Colin, for calling in. We have Rob up on the line, I believe. Rob, how you doing tonight?
Hey, how's it going, Preston? How's everything?
We're doing well. What do you have for us?
Good. I want to talk about the Georgia Tech-Louisville game. So I caught this at the opener, or a little bit later on the opener, on BetOnline at -3. Kind of really nice. Off from my number. I'm more towards 6.57. I see like a lot of people are on Louisville, and like there's this narrative flowing around there that like Dan Gorder is supposed to be like this option whisperer. Not something like I particularly agree with, but just because my number was so off, I was wondering your guys' take on this game.
Yeah, sure. So I considered betting it at 3, to be honest, and I ended up passing. I think ultimately it was 3.5 once it opened at some of the other places outside of the BetOnline opener. It's Georgia Tech or nothing for me. I don't know. You know, the number I think I have now like at 5, and I think Matt's around 4.5 where it is right now at Chris, for example. Pinnacle is still 4. It's pretty close to where like the numbers should be. How much stock do you put into Louisville absolutely choking away a game against Florida State that they should have won? They're up by 3, under 2 minutes left, and they threw the ball on first down, which was really strange, which it looks like it maybe was an audible that was even weirder. And then he throws an interception, and then Florida State breaks a tackle on a slant pattern for 70 yards to beat Louisville. That's a pretty sick spot to be in. Can they bounce back? Sure, they could. I think Georgia Tech, the option, it's not one that Louisville's seen this year yet. So, whether he's a whisperer or not remains to be seen. I just don't think it's a game I can ultimately put a ton of stock or money on at this point.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think if the time to bet Louisville was last week, right? That was kind of your spot. That was kind of their last, I don't want to say their last stand. Obviously, we got a lot of season left ahead of us, but that's a chance to kind of right, you know, this horrible start they had, and they just completely gave it away late. So, you know, you've got a team that's already been really struggling. They're just, you know, they're not a good football team as it is, and it doesn't look like they're well coached this year coming off of a heartbreaking loss. Are you going to get another max effort out of them? And to make things worse, you know, that's the first thing I've heard good about Van Gorder, and I don't
ever.
Know how long,
oh,
by the way. But, I mean, this Louisville team's never faced the option. They've never faced Georgia Tech, actually. So, you know, you can say whatever you want about, you know, their defensive coordinator being prepared, but if they've never seen it before, you just don't really know what to expect. So, I think it's a pretty tough spot to back Louisville. I'm not necessarily chomping at the bit to bet a Virginia Tech team that's looked really mediocre, but I don't know if you could play Louisville.
I considered laying 28.5, and I'm so mad I didn't last week. I think the time to bet on a Georgia Tech team when they have a shot to just route Bowling Green.
I mean, when anyone's playing Bowling Green, that's
we should have just bet that. That was a whiff. That was one of the bets I was upset I didn't actually get down on last Saturday. But thanks, Rob. I appreciate you calling in, buddy. John is up on the line next. We have a couple callers on hold, but I think it's John. How are you doing tonight, John? You there, John? Hey, I hear you now.
Yeah.
How you doing, buddy? What do you have for us?
I'll be doing good in about a week when the Braves put that sweep on the Dodgers.
I like I like it.
What?
Yes.
I'm going to bet sweep for what it's worth, so you'll probably get at least one game.
Well, hey, what are your early thoughts on them starting Ryu game one and Kershaw game two?
I don't think it matters.
I was kind of hoping they'd start Kershaw so that we could have the Braves could have the 1-0 lead going into game two and more pressure on Ryu. But
okay.
I guess it's probably not going to matter. They'll go back to Atlanta 2-0 either way. So
Ryu's been pretty fired, to be honest.
Mine and Matt's Wildcats. You know, a month ago they're minus 14 at Florida. Now, or plus 14. Now plus 6 at A&M. To me, that seems, quite a bit the adjustment. Is it the your power ratings, have they adjusted that much, or do you think that line is a little short?
Yeah, I'll take this. So I think for people that are listening live, I'll rephrase the question. And he also was giving me flack. He said the Braves are going to beat the Dodgers. That's why I was pointing at my hat. I'm actually wearing an L.A. hat. But he had a question about Kentucky, and Matt's a Kentucky fan, so I'll let him take most of it. But it had to do with, I think he said the line, a local ahead line was plus 14 this week, Kentucky at Texas A&M. Now it's about 5.5, 6. So is that a big enough adjustment? Is it too much of an adjustment? I mean, Kentucky, we have another question on Twitter, and we'll get to some of the not overreactions, but biggest adjustments on teams, whether they be positive or negative this season. And Kentucky was on my list of, I think I did a top five, and they were, I think, fourth or fifth as far as adjustments, and one of the top two positively. So I've moved them roughly, I think it was like 8.8 points or something in that range. So for them to be 14 now, 6, 5.5, I actually think that's basically spot on. I mean, they've just proved it week after week after week, and I know A&M's actually probably better than we anticipated to some extent, at least from where I had them rated going into the year. So maybe it's a little short if you think A&M's actually, better than where we had them maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. But for me, I'm not probably not touching the game. I think it's a pretty good line. I think Kentucky's defense is just that good that it's tough to really lay more, over a touchdown if you're not going up against, say, Georgia or Alabama.
Yeah, John, I had the line right here that, in between 5 and 6. So I think this is perfect, honestly. And, I understand that, some people probably eager to finally make money fading Kentucky now. They think the ship has sailed and now it's time to get on board betting against them, that they're going to come back to earth. But I really think that when you have a good running game and good defense, that travels well. And that allows you to go into tough road environments and games like this, like we saw at Florida, like we saw at South Carolina last year, where they can go in and battle because all they need to do is control the line of scrimmage on offense, play good defense like they've been doing, and they got a shot.
So, at least hang around. Yeah.
I do think that's one thing that makes it hard to lay a number like 5 or 6 with A&M. I think if you want to play this game, I would probably just, keep riding these Kentucky unders. You look at A&M's defense. I really like Mike Elko, their defensive coordinator. They got a really good rush defense, and it's going to be a tough environment for Terry Wilson. So I think if you're going to play this game, it's probably under or nothing.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, Terry Wilson, somebody's going to make him, instead of Benny Snell, you would think, correct?
You would think.
Now, I mean, he showed glimpses or a couple good passes against Florida, but he hasn't shown me much since as far as the passing game goes.
No, I mean, he really hasn't had, the crazy thing about this team is they
hasn't
haven't,
to.
Outside of the, late in the Florida game, they've really just been sitting on a lead for the last 3 or 4 games. So they haven't had to push their offense. We haven't really had to see what they do from behind, So it's going to be interesting to kind of see if A&M jumps out. How do they handle it? Can Wilson throw the ball? And will he even need to throw the ball to get him back in the game?
Hey, John, we appreciate your call tonight, bud.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, take it easy. Good luck this week. I think I read that Kentucky's won every game by at least 14. So it kind of fits into – that could be wrong. Don't quote me on that,
double
but it's double digits.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really have to make too much of an effort.
The Florida
game,
they scored a touchdown on the last play.
Like the last play.
Yeah, it was really a single-digit game. But
it was 7-14 then in that game.
Yeah.
All right. Still, if you're leading the game, you're not having to make throws through the air or take chances as often.
Yeah, we just really don't know yet.
Yeah,
it's
true. David, we have our last caller, I believe, that's up on hold. Sorry for that, buddy. Thanks for hanging on. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. What do you have for us?
Okay, a couple games. Number one, NC State and Boston College.
Okay.
Do you know if Dillon is going to be in for Boston College?
I can check on that right now. I know.
I looked today and I didn't really see anything certain. It's definitely a pretty big piece of that game. I really didn't find anything on him.
Looks like he's just questionable, the current status. Yeah. AJ Dillon, questionable. Okay. They actually their offense did struggle once he went out. They had a bigger lead, got reduced. It's not like Temple's that special. So, I mean, that's going to be a big piece and a big part of the game. Did you have a side you were leaning on? I think it's too high for what it's worth. I'd probably bet Boston College if Dillon was healthy, but it's tougher to know.
I would have to disagree with you.
Okay.
I'm going to play NC State again. We talked about this last week on Twitter when the market was on Virginia.
Virginia,
I was like, dude, what's up with this? This is dumb. And
that was a strong bet. I think it was good.
Yeah, they dominated. It was 35-14 with like 7 minutes to play. I mean, it was. I don't know. Finley's an NFL quarterback. The routes that they're running are NFL style routes. I mean, Boston College's defense is trash. I mean, they gave it 28 to Temple, or 35, but of course one was a fumble.
One was a kick return too. So 14 were actually just on special teams. So it wasn't a 35-point defensive
disaster. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was 28, I think, because one was the special teams. Wake Forest scored on them at will, and I think we had Boston College in that game, didn't we? Against Wake.
I think you had that second half.
I played the second half, I believe. And it worked out. They covered. Yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, I was checking on that because I really want to play NC State again. And the other one is I listened to a podcast with a guy who looks a lot like you at the beginning of the season.
Oh, no.
He told me Utah was going to be really good this year. And so what is up with them? Their negative turnover margin, which is not a – you know, Winningham is normally turnovers, defense, special teams.
Sure.
So what's up with them?
Cool. So real quick, I'm just going to remind the people that are listening live on the stream, question about BC, NC State. Matt wants to take that game for a minute. And then he also had one last question about the Utah Utes, who have struggled. I mean, they've been in the games, they've been close, but they aren't quite there like I think people anticipated, myself included. Go ahead.
I actually like Boston College a little bit in this game. I do think you have a valid point about the BC defense. They haven't looked that great. And, you know, Finley and that NC State passing is pretty legit. But I mean, NC State, they played four games. So you got that West Virginia game canceled, so you really haven't seen them tested yet. James Madison, Georgia State, Marshall, and Virginia, none of which are as capable as Boston College. And, you know, this front seven that lost all this talent on the defensive line, they just haven't been tested. They haven't had anybody that can line up and run the ball like BC can. So I really think this is going to be a tough test for NC State. And one thing, obviously, like we harp on so much on the show, not the main reason I like it, but one thing to keep in mind, NC State has a game against Clemson the week after. So coming off of a pretty easy win over Virginia at home, you know, another winnable game here, and then you got Clemson on deck, could be a little bit of a tricky spot for them. So they got to be really careful not to look ahead there.
You know, the Utah Utes, and I agree with what Matt said about Boston College, I think it's a play on them if Dylan's good to go. And if he's not playing, I'd probably just be staying off. I bet I'm at 20-1 to win the Pac-12, and they still could. The Pac-12 South, at least, I believe, was like a plus 650 bet, if I recall. So they're not necessarily dead. They lost on close to the last play against Washington State. They gave up, it was like one of those Washington State 3-yard route patterns. They just took 89 yards, I believe, to the house. By the way, I mean, I didn't bet the total, but I know you had a little bit of over maybe at some point, and it was 21-21 with 7 minutes in the second quarter, and it was 24-21 with, like, the last drive of the game. It was ridiculous. If you had bet over, that was one of the weirder sweats of the weekend. But, you know, I thought they played Washington closer than 21-7. They had a interception. The guy was running in all alone, and he just dropped the ball out of bounds on, like, the 2-yard line, this big defensive lineman that was about to go make it 21-14. You know, Washington, the whole second half, I don't think even scored, and I don't think Utah did either. Or maybe Washington scored on the first drive out of the half. But, I mean, they had so many chances. They had another so it was first and goal, and they didn't get any out of it. And they had another first and goal they didn't get any out of them. That easily could have just been 21-21 and going into overtime. So I wouldn't sell them, you know, in the grand scheme of things yet. As far as, like, you know, the spreads go, they got bet on pretty good. They were favorites early in the week. They were underdogs early in the week, closed favorites at Washington State. And it was a close game, and they were leading until, you know, a weird slant route went 90 yards, and that was basically what swung it. So you're right in the fact that, you know, Whittingham's not a guy that's going to have a negative turnover margin very often or going to make, you know, mistakes on special teams. And the fact that they've done that and still hung around against really pretty good competition is promising, because those things, I think, will kind of regress to some sort of mean. And maybe they're not going to be as strong as they've been on the special teams or on defense, you know, forcing turnovers. But even if they just find some middle ground, then they're going to have shots, obviously, against teams like, you know, when it comes to the South, you know, Arizona and USC. And honestly, Arizona State, Colorado, I don't think any of those teams are that strong. So for me, it's not a total, you know, catastrophe yet for the Utes. But it's they're in a rough spot where they almost have to win out if they want a shot at the South title. They probably can't lose one more Pac-12 game. So this is kind of do or die for them against Stanford, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to, you know, I think Utah just needs to get that first really tough, you know, grind it out win. It seems like, you know, they beat Northern Illinois. They were supposed to take care of them, but then they lost to Washington and then, you know, just kind of lost a coin flip the other day. I don't know. They just seem like they're in a little bit of a funk. They really have no passing game at all offensively. Yeah. Offensive line hasn't been that great. They can run the ball a little bit, but, you know, it's weird. I really thought they were live in the Pac-12 South. I think everyone did this year. And, you know, it's so wide open, you'd think that Whittingham would be all over it. But this Utah team, yeah, they're just
nobody
not clicking right
it,
now. So nobody wants it, apparently.
It's probably now somehow USC, who everyone hated initially to start the year, and they have a good shot. Thanks for calling again, David. We appreciate it. We have Larry up on the line. Thanks for holding for a few minutes. How are you doing tonight?
Good, guys. How about yourself?
Doing well. What do you have for us?
I got two games that are probably my biggest discrepancies of the week and wanted to just get your guys' thoughts on it. Always biased profile games for you guys, but I've got Ole Dom at FAU at 20 and Illinois at Rutgers. I actually have Rutgers as a one-point favorite, and both of those seem to be slightly going against me, so just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on both of those.
Cool. So he had I'm just letting the live streamers kind of get a refresher. They can't hear you when you're calling in. So he had two questions. Ole Dom, Florida Atlantic, he said his number's closer to 20. You can get 13.5, 14. Low spots right now. And then he also had Illinois Rutgers. He said wrong team favored. Illinois, I know, up to 4.5, 5. He had Rutgers a short favorite. So do you have a preference on either of those games?
You know, I had the FAU game higher also, and I looked at this game trying to make a case for FAU, which is really tough because Ole Dom looks a lot better with La Russa at quarterback, and FAU, they're just down this year. I mean, the defense isn't as good. They're just not playing well. But I was trying to make a case, and you know, I think this is actually kind of a good spot for them because you look at, you know, coming off the back-to-back losses, the way they lost last week. I don't know if you saw that.
They went for two, right?
The Middle Tennessee two-point conversion was just hilarious.
And
they got it.
That was when they were down 14 with like 2 minutes to begin with.
Right,
And then they scored 15 points.
Yeah, so you know Kiffin is just going to be steaming all week at practice.
That's actually
and
true.
Looking to take it out on someone. I looked at the Ole Dom box against ECU, and they ended up covering that game, but I think they had like 220 yards.
It was 220 to like 500.
And 35 points somehow. Yeah. So I think this Ole Dom, you know, I don't even know what to think of the Virginia Tech game, honestly, but probably a good spot coming off a close loss where they really shouldn't even have been in the game. Now going on the road facing an FAU team who's probably pretty eager to beat the piss out of someone. So I'd say I lean that way on that game. What was the other game?
Illinois Rutgers.
Yeah, Illinois Rutgers. I had Rutgers a small favorite too. I just got no interest whatsoever in betting that team. And I actually like what I've seen out of Illinois in a few of these games against USF and Penn State. So that's one where my numbers say the same thing, but it's just a pass for me.
I think, my number's lower, too. I think I actually still have Illinois a slight favorite. I think most people are undervaluing Illinois. I did, I think, in the South Florida game. And then Penn State, they got bet down really good. And there was a weird non-cover because they were winning the game outright in the middle of the third quarter. And I believe they're coming off a bye now for this Rutgers game. But the Rutgers line, I thought last week was, you know, the move was correct. They were 17.5 and got down to 14.5. And then they only lost by 7 against Indiana. I think, as far as the market's concerned and where my numbers have been, I've been pretty spot on with Rutgers games. And then Illinois games, I've found myself adjusting Illinois actually positively. So for the market to be a little heavier on Illinois, I'm not surprised. And it's kind of now, you know, 4 or 5 games for Illinois where I'm sitting here thinking, okay, well, maybe they're just even better than I think. So I'm not going to rush probably to bet Rutgers, to be completely honest. And you have to, you know, give some credit to Lovey and having an extra week to prep and all that. So if he got to, you know, 7 somehow, which it won't, I mean, if he got just to there's an extreme, there's a number where you have to bet Rutgers. For me, it probably is, you know, getting a 7 or something. But at the current number, it's still a pass. Is he off the line? All good. Sorry, Larry. We may have dropped you by accident if you're listening. We appreciate you calling in. We got to go through those two games. We have questions. We'll just start firing away because we may have another call or two, and we want to be able to fit as much in as we can. I was going to intro this with a "Will Kentucky ever lose again?" part two, but we did talk about
it. Kind of covered him. Yeah,
so congratulations.
Let's not turn it into a Kentucky podcast.
You know, moneyline dog results. There were 52 winners. There wasn't as many underdogs that actually won. I posted the standings earlier today. You can check my Twitter feed, and every single dog that won was 7.5 or lower, and there still wasn't even that many. So it was essentially Georgia State, Florida, and there was one more, Army, or the ones, and then a few people had Northern Illinois. So I think it was just basically those four games. And the guy who bet Ole Dom last week, still in the lead with the 28. So we'll keep going. We'll roll it over. We'll have another week, and we'll fire those off. I think Thursday morning I'll put up lines.
Who'd you pick last week?
San Jose State. Don't get me started.
Yeah, I think I had Iowa State, so we're both right there, but couldn't quite pull it off.
San Jose, I mean, that was my petty moose of the week, too.
Because 30-yard field goal he missed?
He missed two under 30 that would have won it in five overtimes against Hawaii, and they were again, it was the money line round robin where it swung me. This time I didn't actually calculate it because I didn't want to be as tilted.
Don't even want to know.
Right? But it was bad because I'd gone 3-1 on the other games on Saturday, so it would have been nice to have a 4-1 with a plus 3-something.
Yeah, no kid.
Anyways, first question, at BetterX. I would like to hear guys' thoughts on Notre Dame, Virginia Tech. We did discuss that. He thinks Hokies have a legitimate shot. BetterX, thanks for throwing in. We had a call that discussed the game earlier and had a question about Willis, a quarterback for Virginia Tech, and our thoughts. And I think Ian Book's really good. I didn't mention this before because we were kind of concentrating on where we value Willis versus Jackson. I'm not surprised this number came up. I know my message to you was a Sunday night and said I'm considering Notre Dame -4. Now it's 6.5. I'm not really mad that I didn't bet this one, to be completely honest, though. I think it is going to be close, and I have a 57-1 future on Notre Dame to win it all. So I'm basically on the money line as is. I'll just be rooting that along. But absolutely, I think Virginia Tech is a live dog. If you think it's a good bet, you think the number's too high, hell, I might even get to 7, then maybe jump in and grab the Hokies there. Next question, Tony Darby. He had a question, NFL. I'm going to make you answer it first.
Oh, my. Tennessee.
Putting him on the spot. Yeah, Tennessee, Buffalo, he said. Titans off 3 really nice wins, have to go to Buffalo, Baltimore at home on deck. Just seems like a spot they might overlook, lay an egg, similar to what happened in Minnesota. Any thoughts? I have thoughts. If you don't have any, it's fine.
You know, I know that the Buffalo sandwich spot is a big thing in the NFL. A lot of people like trying to catch teams going to Buffalo at the wrong time and sleeping on them. It probably does play to some degree, but you know how I feel. If there's not other evidence to support the play, then I can't bag it. I haven't handicapped this game or really any NFL games this year, so I can't contribute anything.
Yeah, it's kind of feeling nice.
Well,
yeah,
you know, you got to be a little clued in to be able to book it, but it's just nice to not have to handicap it and be really involved. So
nice. So I would say my one bit of advice, and this is a bigger conversation in general, because I think there's kind of this, let me articulate this correctly, almost change of the guard, where there are probably 5 or 6 really, really elite coaches who have adjusted offensively and scheming-wise to a degree that is so much better than everyone else in the NFL. And they're really obvious names, obviously, like the Rams and McVay. I wrote an article a week or 2 weeks back comparing them to the Golden State Warriors right when the Warriors were getting hot, where they have all these names and guys that are really good, and the coach and McVay's been able to obviously make it work, but his scheming offensively is just so much better than everyone else. And it's kind of like the Warriors' offense. It just caught everyone off guard, and they've been the best team for 5 years. You have Peterson, who obviously the Eagles have started slower. They now Wentz is going to be quarterback coming back from the injury. They'll be there. We obviously know what they can do and what they're capable of. You have like Shanahan, who was with the Falcons previously. Now he's at the Niners. Really smart guy. Another name, though, that people don't realize, maybe you do know this, but Matt LaFleur is the new offensive coordinator for the Titans. He was over with Shanahan, with McVay in Los Angeles last year as the offensive coordinator for the Rams. Learned under McVay, who I think is like the god now. And before that, he was with Shanahan when Shanahan was in Atlanta as a quarterback's coach studying under Shanahan. So he's basically studied under two of the highest IQ minds, period, that we have, I think, in football today. And they're all young, and LaFleur's young, and he's gone to Tennessee, and their offense is just really pure, and they have a really stingy defense. They've stacked defensively to, you know, beat up on teams like Jacksonville, where they can hold Jacksonville to 6, and if Jacksonville's defense is, and they had issues with, I think Mariota came back, and was it, who's the backup for the Titans for like a game and a half? Do you remember off the top of your head? No, it wasn't Castle. I'm totally blanking. Blaine Gabbert played for like a game and a half. There you go, Blaine Gabbert. So it was Mariota, Gabbert, and anyway, they ended up winning anyway, scoring 9 points. But offensively, I think it's just one of those where you want to find a spot, and I tried to do the same thing. I lucked out. The Vikings covered a 7.5 with a backdoor touchdown, but I've been trying to find spots to bet against the Rams. I think the Titans are one where you shouldn't be trying to just find a spot to bet against them, because I think offensively they are it's still hard to quantify how much better they are with LaFleur calling the plays now. So for me, the Titans are almost just bet on or stay away completely. And I'd be shocked if I find myself betting against the Titans at some point this year. You know, maybe down the road if something got too extreme, but at least for now, you know, I'm just kind of watching them do their thing. Honestly, even if it got to like 3 flat, maybe I'd bet on them against Buffalo just because it's still the Bills too. But anyway, that's my thoughts about that. And the NFL, I think, is just really cool and kind of how it's evolved the last couple of years with these young guys and young minds that are taking over. And then the other one's Andy Reid. Obviously, he's not as young, but Kansas City, like those are the 5 names, I think, that are just offensively above everyone else. And you kind of see the Patriots and Belichick getting left in the dust, which is interesting too. Next question up, and this is a really good one. We'll spend a few minutes on it. came from Drew. He said, excuse me, our biggest plus minus, you know, positive or negative adjustments on teams since the preseason. Bama's specifically he was curious about. So I'll start with Bama, and then I'll let you throw a few out. I think we're probably similar on a couple. Maybe there's a few others that, you know, are different. Looks like the Rockies got
Rockies,
out of it.
Rockies, baby!
Bases loaded, 2-out, 2-2 pitch. Are you rooting for the Rockies too,
Jared? Producer here is not happy.
Oh,
he's got a Cubs jersey.
I didn't even realize you're wearing a Cubs jersey. What? You're so quiet over there. That's why we pay you the big bucks. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, it's not awesome, I guess, that...
Well, they, not they to strike out, but that you're a Cubs fan.
I didn't realize you were like, you're like moving over there, and I'm like, man, this guy's really into the show tonight, and he's watching the Cubs game. So Alabama, I was... And people that follow me pretty regularly, I have no clue why some people honestly thought, and there are lots of people that I respect that thought Clemson was rated higher than Alabama entering the season, Georgia was. And I talked about how Alabama's already, if they're not the best, they're tied with the best every year. And they're still a tier above, I think, anyways. And people are talking about losing defenders. They always plug them back in. They always go to the NFL and plug the next group back in. Saban's so good. But the actual value in having a real quarterback like Tua, who's as dynamic as he is, just opened up this case of Alabama could be one of the best teams we've ever seen. And so I'm never going to really be power rating them like lower than Clemson or Georgia on a neutral, which is what I was hearing before the season. So I haven't had to adjust Alabama as much because they were already my number one power-rated team by still a couple points entering the season. I've adjusted them up 3 points based on where the market's been and closed and some of their games and where my numbers were. A&M was an example, even though A&M covered, I think it closed 25-ish, and it did come down a little bit, but my number was around 21 or 22, which still was quite a ways off where market closed in a pretty marquee big game spot like that. So for Bama, slight upgrade, not a ton. I'm curious, Matt, do you have or do you remember how much you've actually upgraded Alabama?
Yeah, I went through and I did this earlier. I just sorted them to see how much they've changed. I've only bumped Bama.
Oh, nice.
I've only bumped Bama 4 points.
Four. Okay. You know, they're so you were pretty high anyways.
They're so high to start the year. You know, yeah, it's just what are you going to do really? And it gets it's kind of turns into a thing where it's weird. They can't lay under a certain number almost. They can't lay over a certain number. So you'll see like, you know, we got guys coming in betting them against Auburn. Like, you know, laying 16 because it's just
like
the number
the
can't be
number.
That low, right?
Oh, wow.
You know? So it's really interesting with them. They're a tough team to power rate. I really struggle once they make, like, the postseason trying to make a line for them in the playoff. I'm almost never close because it's just so hard.
I think what happens, too, sometimes is you know that it probably should be higher even though you haven't actually made a manual adjustment. So you just kind of stay away most of the time because you know it. You know it's Alabama. It might be higher. But it's funny, the game last week was actually, I think, too low. But Tua played, I think, one quarter. So
It turned out being justified that it was only 49 because they just
it was almost spot on, and then ULL scored right at the end and landed 42.
All right, well, do you want to get into who you got, your top three or four, or you want me to go, or what?
I'll do my top two, then, because I did mention Kentucky earlier. Hawaii's another one, who I was honestly pretty high on entering, and I still have adjusted them 9 positively. And then the three biggest moves down for me are Connecticut, UTEP, who was already bad, and so was Connecticut. But Kansas State's probably the most interesting one, where they've just kind of fallen off to being one of the worst three teams in the Big 12,
I'm
maybe the second
surprised.
Worst.
You should have a clear number one. I'm a little surprised you don't for worst team.
I might have missed it when I was going through earlier. There's a chance.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. All right, well, the top three teams I have. Number one, actually, and this is kind of tough because they've played pretty much three cupcakes in Penn State, but I got a 10-point bump for App State. Their offense has been just unreal with this new quarterback. So, and you know, I wasn't even close on the South Alabama game last week, and then they ended up just, I mean, I think they were up 52-7, like, early third quarter in that game.
Yeah, I'm not 10, I'm 7.5. So.
Yeah, I bumped them pretty good. I got Kentucky and Cincinnati tied for second, and Georgia Southern, then Hawaii. And then on the bad end, far and away the worst is Florida State for me, minus 13 points.
Oh, I forgot about them.
13 points since the beginning of the year. And then Louisville's number two, I've dropped them 11. And then K-State and UMass, 9 each. Connecticut and Nebraska, 8.5 each. So some pretty gross teams.
Nebraska, I still don't know how bad they actually are. That's a game I know we might talk about a little later.
I kind of like them this week.
Plus 21 down to, I think I saw 17.5 a couple hours ago. Interesting game against Wisconsin. Thanks for the question, Drew. We appreciate it. We have two more we'll jump into. Darren, I believe you're asking about South Florida, UMass, and question about the total. I think you were kind of suggesting you like the over 70. I had nothing on the total. I thought, if anything, and I think you can still get 14, but I thought minus 13.5 was a bet. Where South Florida's coming off these kind of two weird games where they didn't score the ball very well. And I know ECU's been a lot better, and then Illinois has been better. We talked about that earlier on the show, but they, you know, they dropped 49 on Georgia Tech and then struggled to get wins against Illinois and East Carolina. This feels like, I mean, everybody scores on UMass. I'm sure like a Twitter team would score on UMass. So it feels like South Florida should just absolutely, if you know, get things back rolling as they enter conference play here and drop, you know, 40-something on UMass and cover a 13.5 or 14. That would be my lean. I'd end up betting. It was one of my last three that I like cut Monday morning, Sunday night that I, you know, that I was betting. And so it's close, but for the total, I think 70 is pretty close to where I'd have it.
Yeah, I made it 69. I didn't really see much as far as, you know, you know, I didn't really see much as far as the total was concerned. But did you see what the UMass coach said last week?
Well, he's not coaching this week.
Yeah,
he got suspended, right?
I'm not going to use a word, but he compared it.
An R word that's four letters. That's just
compared it to sexual assault, call that the refs made last week. So
it's just being politically correct this day and age, which I kind of feel bad for the guy because he was heated about how things went down. And I'm surprised you get suspended a game for saying that, to be honest. But
I mean, he should be fired for his coaching, honestly.
Yeah, that's an easier way to say, like, yeah, we're going to suspend you, but also you just have been horrible. And UMass is giving up 50 a game. That's another thing. Maybe it's positive, though, where the coach isn't going to be coaching now this Saturday, and they play better.
I do want to say, though, I still don't think USF's very good, and they just haven't been tested yet. So that's a team I'm looking to bet on or bet against as much as possible. UMass, they give up 60 every week.
Yeah.
So
you mentioned that to me a couple weeks ago, and I don't know how they looked so good against Georgia Tech then, because it's not like Georgia Tech's awful.
I think they had two punt return touchdowns in that game. But
so only 35 were maybe on offense.
But it's cool. Georgia Tech. So
last question comes from Desert Bro, I think. So
nice.
At Desert Bro, Cal -2, UTEP +27.5. Cal was the very last play I didn't end up betting at +2.5 Monday morning. I'm kind of upset I didn't. Granted, I wasn't sure if I was just wanting to bet on them again because I still believe my Oregon plus the Cal +3.5 bet against Oregon was good, and I wanted to get it back by betting Cal again against an Arizona team that's not nearly as good. There are a lot of fluky stuff that happened. Cal could have been in that game against Oregon, but they didn't. They ended up looking like they lost by 18, which I think it was a closer game than that. So I almost bet it. And so I lean that way. Obviously, if you like Cal still at -2, that's probably somewhere around 3% worse, obviously, laying 2 versus taking +2.5. But my number now is probably pretty close to where the market is. So at this point, I'm not going to be chasing and betting them as a favorite. I would have as an underdog. And then UTEP, man, that's spot on. They're so bad, but Matt maybe has something. I'm not even going to try to attempt it, but I think 27.5 is right where my number was. And I think I looked at yours. It was 28.
The UTEP game, I got 27.1, so it's right there. That's just why bother? You know, it's you're sitting there, this North Texas, I mean, before last week, they were just destroying everyone. So
you can, you nailed that. By the way, I was really, what's the word, naive, maybe? I wasn't, like, so Matt, we were trying to figure out contest plays for some of the stuff we do here in town in Vegas. And he wanted to use La Tech +7.5. And he listed it, and I responded in some way that was like, actually, that kind of makes sense. North Texas finally in a spot where they're a favorite and a pretty big one against a team who's been kind of the perennial conference contender for a few years straight. Getting over a touchdown, I was like, man, this is probably that makes sense. This is a pretty good spot, at least like a money line shot. And then I ended up betting +7.5, a little smaller, two straight. And I said, that's actually probably like really sharp. That's a stone nuts. And Matt responded, yeah, I know. That's because I mentioned
it.
Because
that's it. No.
And I was like, yeah, I know. I didn't catch his sarcasm. And it was this weird, awkward moment. But you nailed that one. So congratulations on that. That was a really good bet.
No, yeah, North Texas, they really had been awesome before that. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting, you know, do they maybe take a step back now? Have they lost their momentum? And this is a lot to lay. But UTEP, I mean, what have we seen from UTEP? Didn't they kind of get handled by UTSA even last week?
Yeah, they lost by 9. I think they covered a 10. Were they +10 in that game?
Yeah. I guess they snuck in the number. But, yeah, and then what was the other game we had?
Oh, the Cal game.
Oh,
Arizona.
Cal game. Yeah. Yeah, that one's interesting. I was looking at that earlier trying to figure out why Cal was getting steamed so much, and it looks like Khalil Tate, they're pretty much coming out and admitting now that his ankle's not 100%. He's really not mobile. So it's kind of interesting, though, because they haven't been running him. So I don't know how much it affects the offense that he's not mobile because he's not running the ball anyway, and it seems like he's maybe getting comfortable, you know, in a little bit more of a passer.
To some degree.
You know, obviously he's not as dynamic as he was last year, but I think with the Cal defense and him being banged up, that's what that move is right there. But Honestly, I don't really have much of a clue on this one. It's two teams that, you know, I wasn't really all that impressed with last weekend. Cal, more so, was really disappointing. I think we all kind of like them, and they didn't show up. So, you know, I just don't really have a good read on that one right now.
I think so. The data on Tate then this year, if that's the case, is actually probably pretty sound. Where, you know, if you're making projections based on just this year and Khalil Tate when he's not a runner, you know, then you can kind of probably go off of that with confidence rather than trying to gauge, well, is Khalil Tate from 2017 going to show up all of a sudden? If he's not and the ankle is an issue and they're not running, and it's hard to run against Cal anyways. So I think Cal's a stronger team. I'm rooting for them anyways because so I ended up getting sniped by Rufus betting Cal 50-1 at your place at Caesars because for some reason at 8:45 you guys shut down on the strip the night before.
It's not on me.
That's not your fault. But I ended up getting some down, but ultimately comes down to them at home against Washington. So I'm still alive, and I remember seeing that you only adjusted it to 30-1 out despite them losing to Oregon. So if they beat Washington at home, that's an upset, and they're going to still have a shot at that. So I'm rooting for Cal. I still think they're a better team than where the market's been the last 2 weeks, and both, you know, last week it moved from 3.5 to 2-ish, and then today they moved, you know, or not today, but this early week it moved from 2.5 to the favorite. So I think they are a strong team, and we'll see where they go from here. I think that's it for the questions. Let me double check. Nice. All right, so there's a couple more games we'll just jump on, and then we'll wrap up the show. You wanted to talk about BC, NC State. We already talked about that one. Let's do Nebraska, Wisconsin, because we just threw it out there briefly, like a minute ago.
All right.
And I know you probably want a better number now to back Nebraska, but what's your case to play to, you know, Scott Frost and maybe get an actual win here under their belts?
Well, I went through and looked last week, and, you know, you see on the scoreboard 42-28 home loss to Purdue, pretty – you know, not really something you're looking to see for a team you're trying to back that hadn't been playing well. But, you know, looked at this game, and the box score was very similar to the Colorado game where they outgained them. They moved the ball really well, but it wasn't reflected on the scoreboard for whatever reason. You know, they drive down the field and then turn it over on downs or, you know, just, you know, miss a field goal. So something bad happens. And I understand how frustrated they are right now. If you look at Virginia or this Nebraska team with Martinez, just so much better than they were with the other guy. So you got Scott Frost, who no one can deny is a great coach, and a quarterback who's more than capable, getting three touchdowns against a Wisconsin team who's just not been impressive at really any point this year, I don't think. I mean, do they have like a, you know, the Wisconsin one was nice, but they kind of had to pull away and win that, or the Iowa win, I should say. So you got one team that really hasn't looked impressive. They haven't been able to blow teams out against a really well-coached team with a capable quarterback, capable offense with this quarterback. I don't know. A number just seems like it's wrong to me.
So my favorite play that I didn't bet in this game would have actually just been betting the over, which I think then moved today like 2.5 points up, because I think Wisconsin's defense has actually kind of gotten beat up to an extent, and now Nebraska's the best offense they've seen by far, but BYU shouldn't generally be able to just move it like they did and run the ball against Wisconsin defense, and then Iowa did it the very next week. So, I mean, they have, I guess, 2 weeks to prep for this. They're coming off of a bye, so I guess that favors Wisconsin some, but yeah, I like the over. I didn't end up getting it at 56, and now it's 58.5. So it's a pass, but it was really close for what it's worth if people were leaning that way. And it would be nice if Nebraska 21 showed up again, but
yeah, it looks like it's steaming the other way. It's probably not happening.
Yeah, they're a team, though. Like you mentioned the Colorado, and that's another reason I'm kind of intrigued to see if Colorado reaches 3. I kind of like ASU +3 for what it's worth. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that game.
Yeah, but, I didn't see much there. But
it's like Arizona State has, like, you know, the strength of schedules in the top 30. Colorado's outside the top 100. Their one big wins on the road at Nebraska, where they needed Martinez to get hurt, and they needed like 3 fourth-down conversions on the final drive just to win. It was pretty fortunate. So I'm kind of down on Colorado to an extent. I think Nebraska is better than their record for sure. And I know some sharp guys that bet Nebraska +3.5 last weekend. I didn't get involved, but I didn't mind it. I think they are a better team that's worth keeping an eye on, because we have this thing in the sports betting world where we don't have to bet if they win or lose a game. We can actually bet the spread. And so there might be some value looking at Nebraska in the near future.
Yeah, and I also want to make note, I know this is somewhat negated by the fact they're coming off a bye, but Wisconsin has Michigan on deck also. So
there you go.
Maybe a little bit of a look ahead against a Nebraska team they know they're probably going to beat.
Two more games? Does that work? Do you still want to talk about Tulane, Cincinnati?
Yeah,
I didn't have any thoughts there, so you can just take that one away.
Hold on, let me pull this up here. What do I got jotted down?
Tulane by 100?
Yeah, no. So I watched Tulane last week against Memphis, and, you know, I didn't really think much of that game. I didn't see anything. Situation was concerned. The number looked fine. But, I mean, Tulane just dominated them. It was a complete beatdown pretty much. And, you know, the second half, they just ran away with it. Memphis really couldn't do anything. I was impressed with Tulane on both sides of the ball. I thought they controlled the line of scrimmage. And the Cincinnati team, you know, I know I said it with Kentucky earlier that everybody's looking for the time to go against them now that they've had this great start. But I still don't really think this Cincinnati team's that good. I mean, you look at their schedule. They've beaten Ohio, Miami, Ohio, you know.
The Ohio game was lucky, too.
Yeah, let me just pull this all up. Who else they got?
The UCLA game has been garbage.
And then they're coming off this 49-7 win over UConn. So, you know, I still have a lot of questions about Cincinnati, and I really like Willie Fritz. I like Tulane. They're going to be able to run the ball, and I definitely think they're live for the upset.
It kind of feels like one of those, big Tulane upset. They're going to be flat at Cincinnati, where in reality they could easily just win this game.
Yeah, I just think they're good, and Cincinnati hasn't really proven that much to me. You know, you got a noon start with a couple bigger games on deck for them also, so I kind of think Cincinnati's bound to come back to earth here soon.
That Tulane-Memphis game, that was one where as soon as it started and I'm watching 10 minutes in, I just knew I totally whiffed on, like, the easiest winner of the week probably.
Right, yeah.
And so I actually bet on plus 10 second half.
Yeah.
And a little bit live after Memphis scored. So it worked out and got some money for it, but they crushed Memphis. Last one, LSU-Florida. This is one I jumped on early. So this is a bet, people that are listening. I bet Florida, but it's probably not 3 or better anymore. Let me double check. I haven't actually looked at it's 2.5, too. So I wouldn't recommend a bet anymore. But if you are watching it, follow it throughout the week. I got 3.5. Most of my money's on 3.5, some plus 4, actually, that went Sunday night late. It hit 4. But I think Florida, I think the game, for one, should be pick. I did a write-up on this game earlier today. And I'm just going to kind of like glance through it because I want to make sure I hit on all these points. But for one, LSU, I love that they beat Auburn, and I loved them early, and I love this Burrow kid at quarterback, and I think they're a slightly better offense than they've had in the past, and definitely the best quarterback they've had probably since Jamarcus Russell. But their Auburn win now, every time Auburn plays, looks worse and worse, or less impressive, I should say, just because Auburn, you know, struggled to – I mean, they got outgained by Arkansas as a 30-point favorite at home. They struggled to – I know there was a weather issue and a delay, but – they couldn't pull away from Southern Miss last week. So now that LSU win, not looking great. Week one against Miami, they looked fine, but I think the numbers, the yards per play stuff kind of said that was supposed to be a lot closer than that final score. So a Florida team that, I mean, the only now their bad loss is to Kentucky, who's now a top 12-ish team, maybe 50, at least 15. And, you know, Florida team that just dominated defensively at Mississippi State. And I think if you can get the 3, it's good. But I do have the majority of my money on 4 and 3.5. I just think, you know, the numbers say I think it should be, I think LSU like minus a half. So getting over the hook on a key number like 3 is usually automatic. And I think Florida has a coaching advantage. So anyway, I like the spot. Everything kind of lines up. And LSU, well, they'll be tested again. But at this point, like, how good really is that Auburn win when it's all said and done?
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much touched on exactly what I was going to say. I was reading about this earlier, and they were talking about how last year Mississippi State beat LSU 37-7. So Mullen and Grantham completely dominated.
Oh, interesting. Because now Mullen's, for people that don't know, he's at Florida now.
Yeah, so so both of those guys are at Florida. So, I mean, I know LSU's looked really good. I know they beat Auburn, like you said.
I didn't even put that
together.
Not
as impressive.
Nice.
But I still am not sold that this LSU team's even going to win 10 games. I think they're going to lose a few games here down the stretch. I think the fall's coming. You know, the Ole Miss win was nice, but I just think this is a different animal now going into Florida, and this is the first really big game in the swamp for Mullen. I mean, the fans are going to be really pumped after winning those back-to-back road games, coming back home, so this place is going to be crazy. And, you know, like you said, I think you got a coaching edge, you got a team that's playing great defense, playing well, and kind of I think what we might have talked about last week is that early season loss to Kentucky might have actually been the best thing for them, kind of hitting rock bottom early, you know, facing some adversity and dealing with it and figuring out how to overcome that. So this Florida team's trending upward, and, yeah, I think that's the only way you can go in this game.
I should mention that, so, yeah, it's not like I'm anti-LSU ultimately. I bet them last week when it got to 9.5. I just didn't understand the Ole Miss love. So I'm not really anti-LSU to an extent where I'm just fading them. I bet them just a week ago. So it's more of a play, I think, just on Florida and the fact that the number's just wrong, probably kind of this perception in the market at least, that LSU is better. Last thing before we wrap up the show, there's probably some people listening that remember this. You may or may not, but I said probably 4 years ago now that I would delete my Twitter account if Ottavino wasn't the best closer in baseball in 2 years or 3 years. I had some time frame on it, and he was just, his slider was so nasty. And we know this year as a setup man, he has like one of the best FIPs, WHIPs, ERAs, period. He's been fantastic. But I'm pretty sure like a week after I tweeted that, as we're watching him face off against the Cubs, bottom of the eighth, they're still up 1-0. a week after I tweeted that he needed Tommy John surgery, and I totally just mushed him to like a 2-year injury phase. And luckily, he's back and he's pitching like a beast. But I still feel bad about that for family Ottavino. Another strikeout, and the producer Jared is cringing in his chair as they are four outs away. I'm sorry.
Can I brag on my great prediction I made 2 hours ago that the Rockies were going to cling to this 1-0 lead until the Cubs took it from them?
So you think it's?
I mean, I was just joking about that. In the third inning, I was saying it's going to be 1-0 until the Cubs take the lead.
You live bet under 6.5 for
no,
for the account.
Of course not. No.
Hey, everyone that called in, that was awesome. We had 5 or 6 calls right off the gate. We appreciate it. We appreciate the participation, and we appreciate the Twitter questions. I think we ended up talking probably like 13, 14 different games this week, so it was a lot of fun. If you have any more throughout the weekend, just send us messages on Twitter, @LindaTrain, @SportsCheetah. Thanks again, guys. We'll talk to you next week.